And welcome back to Harry Potter and the Reread Podcast. I'm your host, David Jansen, joined as always, my co-host, Kyle Jansen. Kyle, how you doing?
Solid. I'm trying to think of something.
No one can see your dance.
No one can see the dance. I'm trying to amp myself up because we are doing a nighttime episode.
And... yeah, we don't usually record at night. and we're tired. So,
but okay. we will make it fun because you know what? I actually liked the chapter that we're going to discuss here on Harry Potter and the Reread Podcast. We're talking Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and we're doing chapter 21 today, in the Eye of the Snake.
Yeah, this was, right? Yeah, I think the first chapter where I was like, should I just read the next one? Yeah. Like, for the first time, I'm like, okay, something's happened. I want to know what's happening.
I can actually flip the page and want to see what's going on.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I think we're finally out of just school classes. Yeah.
Well, not quite, but for the most part, we might get some moving. I mean, we might go up and down in the pacing, but I think we're over halfway. Stuff happened. And it was interesting. There were some interesting things going on this chapter, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
like a quick summary. Yes, there was a class, there was school, but there's awkward teenage love, and there's not murder, but definitely assault. Wizard assault. Snake wizard assault. So yeah. Why don't you take us through this chapter, and then let's break it down some more, because there's actually stuff to talk about this.
There is. I mean, there's always stuff to talk about, but stuff that we actually want to talk about. So yeah, chapter 21, Eye of the Snake. So chapter starts off, Hermione goes and tries to get Hagrid to listen about Umbridge. It's no use. He's clearly hiding something in the forest, but they still don't know what. And it is, in fact, then time for Care of Magical Creatures. Good news, Umbridge is not there. However, Hagrid not looking good. Turns out, though, that Hagrid does have for them in the forest a herd of thestrals. However, nobody can see them except for Harry and Neville. Turns out Neville can also see them. While they're looking at the invisible thestrals eat a cow, Umbridge, in fact, does arrive. And tells us that apparently the ministry has classified thestrals as dangerous creatures. Hagrid argues that that's just because they're misunderstood, because nobody can see them and they're often associated with death. But then she does her normal Umbridge class observation stuff, except way more cruel than she has previously been to the other teachers. So we have a bit of a time jump now. We've gotten all the way to December. Ron and Hermione's prefect duties are heating up. Over the break, it turns out that Hermione is going to go skiing with her family, and Ron and Harry are going to head to the Burrow. However, Ron forgot to tell Harry this, so he was sad until, you know, classic sad boy Harry. And then, you know, Ron tells him, oh yeah, she told me weeks ago that you were invited, I just didn't tell you. So classic Ron. Yeah. Then we're going to have our last DA class before the holidays. Some news on the Gryffindor Quidditch team. Ginny is the new seeker, and we have two new beaters, Andrew Kirk and Jack Sloper. So then we get into the class portion. I liked this quote. Neville had improved beyond recognition. So Neville's they decided to do sort of a review of all the stuff they covered in their previous classes. So Neville, Harry working with Neville. Neville's doing better. Class kind of goes on. Nothing too important to note there. But at the end of the class, it's just Cho and Harry left in the room. And she's crying. And she's wondering if Cedric had known the stuff Harry was teaching them, would he have survived? And Harry tells her that, you know, Cedric did know this. And he died anyway. Because Voldemort, you know, knows what he's up to when it comes to murder. But don't worry, because while they were talking, they wandered under some mistletoe. However, then we just get a random ominous page break. Then Harry's back in the Gryffindor common room. And who could possibly know what happened? Turns out, they kissed. And it was critical we read an entire page before we get to that big reveal. But Cho was crying while they kissed, and Hermione has to explain that Cho is in fact crying all the time, and now she's guilty about what happened with Cedric and liking Harry, and she really just is not in great control of her emotions, understandably. Hermione is still writing to Crumb. That's a thing that gets mentioned here. Ron is jealous. And then Harry goes to bed, and he starts to dream, and the dream starts off as a dream about Cho, but then it morphs, and Harry is the snake. And as the snake, he's feeling the snake's emotions, and he sees the snake and knows that he, as the snake, has attacked Arthur Weasley. So he freaks out. Everyone tells him, oh, it's just a dream. He ensures them it's not. Neville goes and gets Professor McGonagall, and they head off to see Professor Dumbledore.
There it is. Lots. I liked it. We got Arthur Weasley attempted murder. We get, who would have guessed, I guess, kind of reading it again. I don't think I ever would have predicted that Cho Chang, Harry Potter kiss was in the same chapter as attempted murder on Arthur Weasley.
No.
That was something we did not remember.
That was certainly not in our predictions. Why don't we just, let's just tackle this sort of chronologically. So the chapter starts off with the care of magical creatures lesson. Mm-hmm. And Hagrid 100% should have been listening to Hermione, should have got that all sorted out. Because his review is not going to go well.
It wasn't a great lesson. It's an interesting lesson. And yes, he should be proud that he like has the only tamed Threshtles than like all of Europe or whatever that he said. But when you actually kind of think about it and the concept of these things where you can only see them if you have seen death, I mean, you should probably give the students a bit of like maybe a warning, because when people view death or see death, it's not generally a pleasant experience that they have.
No, not generally.
So when you just kind of throw that in their face, it could be a little off-putting.
I think my big problem with the concept of care of magic creatures is, why is every class a field trip? Right? You know what I mean? Like
to the forest that is literally forbidden.
Why are they not learning about what thestrals are, what they're used for? What are the, you know, false assumptions about them? Why are they not spending multiple lessons covering that? And then, oh, okay, now we've learned all about what they are, what they do, how you interact with them, and then we're going to go meet them. Like, I think back to like the Hippogriff lesson, and it's like, what if we had explained what a Hippogriff was and talked about it more than 10 seconds before we met the Hippogriffs? Like,
okay, I went to high school in small town Canada, and I had an agriculture class, and you literally did just take field trips out to the farm to go look at animals. So yeah. I can kind of relate to care of magical creatures right now.
We didn't have an option to take an agriculture class at my high school.
It's no, not in the syllabus.
Not in the syllabus. But I think the big thing about this is, in the last episode, you mentioned that Umbridge hates Hagrid, and I pushed back on it a little bit at first, but absolutely not now. Oh. It's clear now. She hates him because he's a half-breed.
Yeah. Yeah. Though like some super kind of race. Well, I wouldn't even call it undertones. Like
no, not racism, undertones.
Like kind of overtones. Right in your face, or prejudice right in your face, yeah. In this sense. Treating Hagrid like he's a less than, humiliating him in front of all the students by kind of like miming how she is talking and explaining, like, I will write your review. And
you can't see Kyle's miming that out as he's going like very slowly, but it was just incredibly demeaning. Yeah. And she's sort of like, she has him all flustered, and she keeps jabbing him about like, oh, how is it to learn a lesson from someone who can't keep a coherent thought? Well, yeah. It's just very clear that she is not a fan of him for nothing more than his mother was a giant.
It explains why she gets along with the Slytherins, I guess I'd say, considering they all kind of share those values. She's been very easy on Slytherins throughout this entire book. So yeah, that's kind of there, but at the end of the day, pretty ugly side of Umbridge being revealed here. Much more open. Like I kind of had that inkling or feeling, but this, yeah, that definitely cements it here.
Yeah, it's not hidden at all.
No.
Anything else in there do you think that we're going to need to like come back to later?
Does Hagrid get sacked or canned?
I mean, I
or
assume
put
so.
On probation? That's the only thing that so. I really think yeah. is going to be coming back.
There's no way that she's going to be okay with him teaching at school.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was anything. I don't know if there's anything on like Thestrals or anything that we have to.
No, I think basically that's the reveal, right? Like, because yeah. Harry had been wondering what this was for the longest time, thinking that he was crazy because he saw something that Luna Lovegood could see. Mm-hmm. So I think that's ultimately.
I think it's more of payoff from the beginning than yeah. than setting up more stuff for the future. Yeah,
absolutely, I agree.
Unless, hold on. Are they going to ride the Thestrals to the Department of Mysteries at the end of the book?
Do they? Maybe.
They totally are. I don't know. Like, I don't remember that, but I think they're going to now.
All right. I like that prediction. So we'll get a little bit more Thestrals.
I think so. Otherwise, why have we spent this much time talking about them if they're not going to pay off in the conclusion of the book? That could be fun.
Could be.
Yeah. So the next thing that happens is we got the final DA class of the term. There's lots of good stuff here. A lot of like little moments. The Harry's the first one there, and Dobby has decorated the room for them. And I thought that was super fun.
Well, not only just Christmas decorations, but like photos or like pictures of Harry's head just dangling from the ceiling with like the message, "Have a Harry Christmas." And I love it. That's super funny.
Yeah. That's always fun. Those are like the moments that they can't put in the movie, but they're fun. Mm-hmm. Then we get the Angelina Harry conversation about Quidditch. And I like that Harry doesn't know that Ginny is good at Quidditch, but at the same time, how does he not know? Like he spent like summers with her and like, they went out to play Quidditch with Fred and George and they just left her behind. Like probably
seems like that
kind of thing they would do. But like, I like that he doesn't know that she's good. And obviously I bet you we're going to have another Quidditch chapter and we're going to find out that she is in fact pretty good.
She's got to win a game.
Well, she certainly wins a game in the next book. I just don't know if she does in this book or not. I don't know if we're going to have to witness it or we're going to witness
Harry being in detention.
I think he's going to be in like an occlumency lesson while it's happening. That's my guess. So we're not going to have to, you know, luckily.
I think that's the only Quidditch chapter that we're going to have to suffer through.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have to put ourselves through it. But that's fine. I like that Neville is better. Yes.
He's technically sound. He is, but his aim is off. That's kind of the vibe that I got from the lesson.
Well, he's figuring it out how to do it. Like,
ultimately stuff that like no teacher has been able to teach him. He's good at herbology, right? Where he doesn't need to use his wand or produce any type of magic. He works with his hands in that sense, but this is actually, I think it, again, I kind of talked about it last week as well, but just how good of a teacher Harry is in these situations and how he kind of truly enjoys it. It's kind of sad though, like it's described a little bit as like, oh, Harry, as he usually did, went with Neville because Neville had no partners to go with.
Well, yes, but I also assume everybody goes with the same person they've been going with the whole time.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So there's that. Then we get the Cho Harry kiss scenario. That was kind of, I don't want to say fun, but it was kind of funny to read where she clearly
weird. Yeah. Anyway,
I mean, it is weird. She's clearly all over the place and doesn't really know how to deal.
Yeah.
And it's clear that Harry has no idea. So, you know, in the next couple of pages, Hermione spells it out for him And the reader, if the reader is a 13-year-old boy who also wouldn't assume.
Well, I took one of the things that I said is like, I think the first time I read this, I probably didn't conceptualize any of the emotion or any of that at that time. I don't think I had the what does Hermione say, the emotional maturity of a teaspoon.
I have it written down for a reason that you can probably imagine. Emotional range of a teaspoon.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's not going to matter. I don't think we're going to have to spend that much time dealing with Cho, hopefully.
He's got to break up with her at some point, right? Because, like, as Hermione has pointed, there wasn't closure. Cho was expecting Harry to, like, ask her out or something, or mm-hmm. go on a date, which he didn't do because instantly he kind of had this gross feeling about it, being like, oh, this actually isn't right.
Yeah,
right?
She's not. So, she's clearly not in a great spot.
Yeah, I feel emotionally. Bad for her. I do too. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not in a great spot. And then we get to, like, the best stuff, which is Harry's dream. And we can yada yada over, like, the Cho portion of the dream. It doesn't matter. It's a tiny portion of this chapter. Again, I don't know how many pages this chapter was.
I feel like that's a lot of the form of the chapters of this book, where it's just one little event that happens at the end, and then the rest is just more context.
Yeah, so it's sort of a 22-page chapter. The dream was like a page and a half.
Yeah.
If that. But it was awesome.
It's like, great.
Like, it talks about, like, his body felt smooth, powerful, flexible. He tasted the man's scent. He had important work to do. Like, he was the snake.
He is Nagini.
He was the snake. I think the first time you read it, you just really grasp onto he is the snake.
You don't
know. And the snake has attacked Arthur. But when you read it again, knowing that the snake has attacked Arthur, you get, like, the snake didn't attack Arthur, didn't go, like, the snake, wherever the snake, we don't know where they are yet. The snake wasn't there to attack Arthur. The snake had another mission. It mentions, like, he wanted to attack them, or she, I guess, wanted to attack the person. But they had important work to do. They had other things they were trying to do. And it's kind of just like hidden in there. He's seeing a mission, which is interesting. Now, Arthur, obviously, he had, like, when the snake entered the room, Arthur had been sleeping. Mm-hmm. But then he wakes up and then he takes his wand. So then the snake self-defense attack here.
Yeah.
Or preemptive attack. But that's not why he was there. So I don't know if I would have caught that on the first time. I think I would have just focused on, oh shit, Harry can be the snake and the snake attacked Arthur, not where were they?
That's actually, I never really thought about that. Like, I wondered where they were, but I didn't really put that together. I assumed still that the snake's purpose was to attack, but I believe it's not in the way that it's worded, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 90% sure that Arthur was at the Ministry.
Yeah.
And I think they're guarding the Department of Mysteries. They have somebody there guarding it every day. That's what I think. Like, that's where...
That makes sense. And I feel like that is it. But at the same time, isn't that suspicious if you're Arthur Weasley, a Ministry employee, and you're sitting there all night guarding it when you're not supposed to be really drawing attention to yourself, and you're kind of,
I mean, I think at this point,
revolt against the Ministry.
I think they're rotating people through.
Yeah.
And my understanding of the Department of Mysteries is it's kind of just like its little area, and like after hours, you wouldn't expect anybody to be there. And we clearly haven't figured out how to use magic effectively to do, like, security alarms or whatever, or
of course
telephones. So those types of things are off the table. But that's what I think. I think he was there. I think the snake was there for a totally different, like, coincidental reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously we're pretty lucky that Harry was able to sense that it wasn't a dream.
It's not the first time that he's had a dream that wasn't a dream, right? Like, we saw it with Frank Bryce last year, and it was similar, yeah. But he was still kind of, he was an outsider at that point viewing the event. So
no, he was the snake again.
Was he the snake again in that point?
I think he was. I think he was the snake. I mean, I'm going to Google this while we hear. I don't know.
Now I'm actually curious, because I felt like this time, or maybe he was the snake, but he didn't have the ability to control what was going on. Whereas it feels like this time Harry was actually controlling it. Obviously not in his own mind, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Like, I'm trying. There's, if you just Google Harry Potter, Frank Bryce Nagini, it doesn't answer the question of was, did they sort that out? So Harry had a vivid dream in which he saw the murder as it happened. So it didn't, we don't know if it was sort of the same, he was the snake piece, but it was. He was there. He was like in the room. So maybe it was kind of similar, but I don't think it was the exact same. I think I'm wrong about that.
I think this is just much more, much more in regards to Harry having, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, where he had control of the situation. He had his own
agency.
That's the word.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if I've read some stuff and I don't know if it's like confirmed or anything. But Nagini wasn't a Horcrux until Frank Bryce was murdered. I think she was actually the last Horcrux created.
And it was accidentally.
Well, I think now that she's the Horcrux, now Harry has a connection to her, the snake, as well as Voldemort, right? Because all the soul fragments talking to each other. So I think that obvious. I think the fact that they're both Horcruxes, whatever order they were made Horcruxes. Would kind of link them. Like, I don't think he's making a snake a Horcrux prior to his demise. Like, how's he finding that snake later? Mm-hmm. I guess they call to each other or whatever, but we're way off track. We had some good predictions for this chapter. You said we were going to have a Hagrid class, which we in fact did. I had a bit more interesting predictions than you did last time.
I didn't have anything.
And I was correct in thinking that Harry would see Arthur get attacked and he would get a message to the order through Professor McGonagall, which is half true.
Half true.
He talked to McGonagall and they're going to get it sorted out. I did say he would finally talk to Dumbledore, but that's just, I guess, not a little quite. Bit too. I was getting too far ahead of myself. In hopes that we might move the plot along, but that will be our next chapter. We will finally talk to Albus Dumbledore. In terms of things that we didn't remember, we'd already talked about, we were surprised that the Cho Kiss and the Arthur attack were the same chapter. In general, I kind of thought that there would be more to the attack. Like we said, it's a 22-page chapter and the attack's like maybe a page and a half.
So short.
And so I didn't know Hagrid was going to teach us about Thestrals. I had totally forgotten that. I forgot how mean Umbridge was.
Mm-hmm.
All the little details around Hagrid's class had just sort of escaped my mind. Once Cho came up, I knew what scene we were getting, but I guess I forgot that this was happening now.
Yeah, no, that part is memorable. I forgot kind of like how outright horrible and forward Umbridge is in regards to how she treats Hagrid, and also just the snake attack, because even when you predicted it last time, being like, oh yeah, this is gonna happen, like Mr. Weasley's gonna get bit, I didn't know that is something that I totally forgot.
That's okay, because it was fun to read.
Mm-hmm.
There was not even that much stuff that didn't make sense. I do want to talk about, you said Harry didn't ask Cho on a date because there's no opportunities. They don't have a Christmas dance this year. So his he was thinking about it. He's like, I guess I could ask her to do something in Hogsmeade. They go to Hogsmeade like once a month. This is the shittiest boarding school of all time.
They could go for a walk by the lake. They can
where everyone can watch them. There's nowhere to go.
Room of requirement.
You know what? The room of requirement should be able to help them out. It should get them what they need. All right. I love it. But yeah, not a lot of dating option or date options here at Hogwarts. So I don't like, specifically, I don't like that they don't have the Christmas dance. Like, that seems like something they should absolutely have. The Yule Ball seemed like a great idea. Everybody had fun. Well, not everybody.
Did they?
Because yeah. Ron's date certainly didn't. But most people should have fun. We talked about it in the last book, but there was nothing for the younger students. So who is running this school? Yeah.
No one, clearly.
The other thing that didn't make sense to me is we were talking about Harry was feeling a little bit guilty about going to the Burrow for Christmas because Sirius was going to be left alone. Like, why can't Sirius just head out of Grimmauld Place and apparate to the Burrow? There's no, like, monitoring of apparition.
I feel like if you bring that up, then all of a sudden it brings up another plot hole of like, oh, well, then he technically could kind of go places as long as
he makes could sure absolutely
that
he's go
going to the places that are secure and not in public, right?
Yeah, I mean, that absolutely is the case. He should be able to go there unless he can't apparate, but I don't know why he wouldn't be able to apparate because he was not arrested until he was like 25, 21, 22. And they learn how to apparate at like 17, 16. Mm. Unless he doesn't have a wand.
No, he must. Because he's in the battle later, isn't he? Unless, I don't know.
I assume he has a wand. I assume he's got a wand.
I assume he has to. Yeah.
But that like, he should like, yeah, he shouldn't go into King's Cross Station, but he shouldn't have to be cooped up in the house. He should be able to apparate from in the house to other secure places. And get on with it.
And be able to help a bit. Yeah, you've convinced me on that. At first, I was like, oh, like, it's probably best for him to lay low. But yeah, he definitely has opportunities. It's just, can he be trusted with those opportunities? I think that's a whole other question.
Yeah. Anything that didn't make sense to you in this chapter?
I just feel like, I guess there's ways to describe around it. But Harry should have seen Threshold's before this. Like,
I don't think he saw his parents die.
Okay, all right. Like, I can believe that because yes, he's a baby in a crib. He didn't see his dad die, and then when his mom got in the way, like
all he saw was the green.
All he saw was the green light. So yeah, okay, I believe that. I can get that. How do they get after the school year ends? How do they get back to the Hogwarts Express? They take these carriages back, I'm assuming. And last year, would he not have seen a Threshold right then and there? Because
maybe they take the boats.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it specifically says in the book or not.
It certainly doesn't.
Carriages, so.
Yeah. It's a good question.
That's my only question.
Yeah, that's fair. Any other thoughts on this chapter?
It's just like the book is clued into it a lot, and like the other little relationship budding or not budding at this point. Like Ron, again, jealous of Victor, but he doesn't know why when Hermione's writing this letter, and like he hasn't processed it yet, but it seems like Hermione has. I mean, given between like this and the Yule Ball and him not asking her. And
yeah, she's starting. So. I think she has a clue of how she feels. I mean, I think that we have some quotes that we'll get to in a second here.
Yeah.
But I think she might have a bit more sense of emotional comprehension than Harry and Ron have going on.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to quotes then. And why don't you lead us into that? Because it was one of my favorite quotes of this chapter.
I have multiple quotes from this chapter. Like,
lay them on.
So
there were a lot of good lines.
Like, it was a fun chapter to read. I think we've emphasized that. But so this is not everyone is happy to have Hagrid back teaching the class. A very small, unbiased part of him knew that they had a good reason. Grubbly Plank's idea of an interesting class was not one where there was a risk that somebody might have their head ripped off. So that made me chuckle. And I like when Harry has to potentially put together the fact that Hagrid's not a good teacher, even though he's his friend. I will say, I definitely thought the name of that teacher was Grubby Plank and not Grubbly Plank.
Is it Grubbly?
That's what it said this chapter.
I've been saying grubby this entire time.
I've been saying it for my entire life. But no, it appears to be grubbly. So, Wilhelmina Grubbly Plank.
Yeah, Grubbly Plank. I got auto-corrected on Google.
Yeah. Which quote did you write down?
I just had one regarding the prefect duties, and Ron is supervising the first years, and he calls them cheeky little snot rags, you know. We definitely weren't that rude when we were in first year. One, you probably were, and two, this is just what everybody says about youth that comes after them. No respect for their no elders, respect. Even though you were a little prick when you were a kid as well.
100%. I will say, Ron asked, this is one of those quotes that like is embedded in my brain when it comes to Harry Potter franchise. Ron asks Harry about the kiss. How was it? Wet. He said truthfully. That's just one of those ones that's like, I don't know why it sticks in my brain, but it does.
When I read it, I also wondered, like, wet as in, like, you know, like a wet kiss, or was it wet in the fact that she was crying?
Oh, no, she was crying. She was crying. Her face was wet. Yeah. And then the best quote of the chapter, I think, by far. Hermione had just explained that Cho Chang is a human being with a complex range of emotions. And a great comedic line from Ron says, "One person can't feel all that at once. They'd explode." And Hermione's retort of, "Just because you've got the emotional range of a teaspoon." So that was some good comedy. Those are like that moment from Ron. I think they have that quote like word for word in the movie, but they don't portray it the way I read it from the book.
Yeah.
Like it's just delivered differently because Ron is a little bit of he's a different character. He's not the plotting sidekick in the book. He's his own person. And it's just, yes, even when they give him good lines, the way they have him deliver them is like, "I'm an idiot."
Yeah.
Doo, doo, doo. Like, and that's not how this came across while reading it.
No. It's not in that like just kind of one-liner way that you expect from the movies for sure. So we'll have to look, keep an eye on that and see for the day that will come when we watch this movie.
Yeah.
LVP.
Yes, that's where we're next. I had a hard time on both of these categories this week. So I had a few different potential options for LVP.
Okay, let's talk it out.
Briefly, I had Zachariah Smith written down because he was complaining about coming to a class he signed up. He voluntarily decided to come to.
Oh, because they were reviewing instead of learning something new.
Yeah.
I think
he's just kind of a show off.
I read it more of him being kind of like, he is a bit of a show off, but also him being disappointed because he's actually thoroughly enjoying the lessons and wanted to learn something new.
Yeah.
Whereas like now I think he's put in there because we think that he's supposed to be the one who eventually squeals on them. Right. So I think that that's kind of why it's
there's some setup with that.
Yeah.
So I had him, I had Ron because he was letting the twins who were like throwing snowballs at him. And then later on, he lets Malfoy get under his skin about Quidditch again. And it's like, man.
And his little emotional range.
You just got it. I mean, the emotional range, I don't hold against him as much in this particular chapter. But like, you just have to have thicker skin. You're the youngest boy in a house of, where you got five older brothers. How are you not thicker skinned? Mm-hmm. Is just a question I have for Ron. But again, I don't think it's him.
Nope, I agree. It's not him.
So then I have two real candidates. We have Hagrid.
Yeah.
Who did not take Umbridge seriously. And as we talked about, I think that's going to backfire.
And Hermione had told him multiple times that this was going to be an issue.
Yeah. Like he the Thestrals are a cool lesson concept, but nobody can see them. And like, I don't really want to side with Umbridge, but like, if they are considered dangerous by the ministry, like we talked about, like, teach about them first. Don't surprise people with them.
Yeah.
Like, just be a bit smarter about it.
I agree with you. Like, it's not really the smartest move to do that and bring them into the forest that is literally forbidden.
And on the class where he might get observed. Yeah, it's just...
Especially when these creatures here, they've been... He does, like, I'll give him credit. He does a good lesson in the sense that, like,
it's a great
he's
lesson.
Kind of showing, like, oh, yeah, no, there's a lot of, like, myths or misunderstandings about these creatures and that they're actually pretty loyal and stuff and they aren't bad omens at all. And, like, I think those are good, valuable lessons, but you can't just throw people into the deep end like that and not really give them an opportunity to tread into the water at their own speed.
Yeah.
And then
the other option here,
we've got Umbridge, obviously.
Is Umbridge. Yeah. Who are just unnecessary cruelty in the evaluation.
Yeah. We're probably going to spend the least amount of time talking about her, but that's who I ultimately pick here.
Yeah, I don't think there's much else to say.
I can't fault Hagrid for some of his ways because that's just who he is.
Whereas yeah.
We also know this is who Umbridge is, but it's just a much worse person.
It's a much worse
than
Hagrid. And I kind of like, we didn't really get into the details and like all the examples, but it's not a good look for Umbridge, the way she handled that evaluation. Yeah. So I think the double Dolores Umbridge, I feel pretty good about.
Yeah.
So then let's flip this script a little. MVP.
I only really thought of one.
Okay.
I went with Hermione this chapter because she went out of her way to try and protect Hagrid, which I think is probably the reason why I picked her last chapter as well. But she followed through on it. She gets what Cho is feeling, and she explains that to the group as well.
I wrote down explains to the boys what emotions are.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So, and that was really, it's the only two things that really came up this chapter, or like, so, the two things,
yeah,
or reasons. But yeah.
The other person I have to consider here is actually Harry. I think while he doesn't understand what Cho is going through, I think he handles the actual situation okay.
Yeah, like, you know what? That's a good point.
He doesn't make it worse. He's not an asshole. He's not... When Hermione explains what she's going through, he's not like, that's stupid. Don't feel that. Like, he's sympathetic to what she's going through. He also... Like, we get a little, there's a comment about how guilty he feels about the Quidditch stuff because he feels like he let everybody down, which is a reasonable emotion to be feeling, but he's not. But like, we also then didn't have a chapter of him beating himself up about it. Like, it's gone, it's happened, there's not much he can do.
You know what? But
then I think the most important thing is that he knew that it wasn't a dream. He knew the attack was not a dream. And when people tried to tell him to calm down, he did not calm down to the point where Neville went and got Professor McGonagall. And then they are going to go get help because of it. Like, yes, the help because of it is going to be the next chapter. But I think we need to reward Harry now.
I agree with you. I think actually now that I consider that, that plays a much greater role in the book. And I only have one other like small thing that I'd add to it is that we also see a bit of maturity in him or growth in maturity. Okay, yeah, he just beat the shit out of Malfoy a couple chapters ago, which wasn't a smart move. But at one point, and I did make note of this, but I didn't bring it up earlier, after the class when Hermione's like, oh, I wish I could see Threshold's, and he kind of stops and he goes, like, do you really? And then Hermione's like, oh, I'm sorry. And if this would have happened in the first third of the book, he would have been like, you have no idea what it was like that I experienced to do that.
You're right. So, yeah, it was a nice opportunity for him to not be a whiny baby, and he managed to and not
just,
do it.
Just not so, freak out at his friends. So he didn't this chapter. So
yeah.
I'll give it to Harry.
Okay. Too. That's probably good, because looking at the list here, that would have been six Hermione MVPs in a row over the last three chapters. So yeah. We'll spread it around a little bit. So next chapter, chapter 22, St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries. What is going to happen?
So we will obviously get to Professor Dumbledore's office.
Yep.
He may be looking into an oculomancy orb pensive type thing. I don't know. How do they do that stuff again? I can't remember.
Well, the pensive is a memory.
Yeah. Right. It's more I think maybe we'll see a pensive. I think he's going to spring into action, but he's also going to be aloof.
Because not aloof, evasive.
Okay, evasive.
Well, maybe aloof too, because Dumbledore's always aloof.
Yeah.
But I think, so I'm on the same board here. We're obviously going to go talk to Dumbledore. I think he's going to, like, absorb the content Harry's presenting to him, but he's going to try and not interact with Harry all that much.
Yeah.
And so I think part of it's
going to piss Harry off.
Oh, it's for sure going to piss Harry off. I think on the outcome somewhere is we're going to get the instruction that Harry needs to start taking occlumency lessons to stop this from happening again, or to have more control over it happening again. I think we're obviously going to go to St. Mungo's. That's going to be to visit Arthur in the hospital.
Yeah.
And I think the main takeaway from going to visit St. Mungo's is I think everybody else is going to learn about Neville.
Yeah, I think the Neville thing will get introduced. I'm going to go...
Because we already had we've had some hints before. Like, remember Neville and Harry, or Neville and Harry, air quotes, got in a fight, but Neville went to attack probably Malfoy or maybe Crabbe and Goyle earlier.
Yeah.
And Harry, like, wrestled him down, but then they both got in trouble for fighting.
Yeah. I don't think the introduction to oculomancy is going to occur this chapter.
I agree. We're not going to see it, but we're going to get
I don't even think the instructions of it are going to come yet.
Okay, that's fair. We can differ there. I think there's going to be, as part of this conversation with Dumbledore, I think they're going to bring Snape in and he's going to be like, we need to start doing these lessons. That is my prediction.
I don't even think that, because I don't even think Harry knows. We know, of course, that he's seeing Voldemort's thoughts and stuff. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know this yet. And I think Dumbledore does, but I don't think Dumbledore is going to relay that information directly to him.
I think he's going to present. I think this is one of Dumbledore's problems. I think he should just come out and tell Harry what's going on.
He should, but I don't.
But
think
instead, I think he's going to dance around it. So that's fair. We can differ on that, but I think we're going to get that a little bit. We're like, they're going to say maybe because it's basically Christmas is now here.
Yeah.
So they're going, they're leaving, they're going to the hospital.
This is
going to
be the Christmas chapter, basically.
I think, I think we're going to have two Christmas chapters. That's not a prediction. I'm reading the titles of the next two chapters. But maybe the instruction to start those lessons, you could be right. Maybe that doesn't happen until they get back. But I think we're going to get here.
I think so. Oh, yeah, never mind. I see chapter 23.
Otherwise, what else are we going to get here? We're going to learn. Maybe we'll learn where Arthur was and why he was there.
Potentially.
That would be fun. Probably not, because that would be too much information. But
do we see Sirius? Yes or no?
Yes.
I agree. I think Sirius is going to make an appearance.
I don't remember them going to the Burrow for Christmas.
Like, that's the thing. I was going to say, I don't think they go to the Burrow, because everyone from the Weasleys are going to be at the hospital.
Yeah. So
we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Those are some better predictions than we've had in the last couple episodes.
I like it.
Yeah, so that was a good chapter. That was a good chapter.
I enjoyed it. Good discussion. That is it, though,
for that this is it.
Episode. Follow us on Instagram at Harry Potter Reread Podcast. Follow us on Spotify. Subscribe. Don't forget to like and subscribe, as they say.
That is what they say. Get us at the, you know how to get podcasts, so we don't have to talk about how to get pies. Although I will tell you, my podcast listening app is shutting down and it's very frustrating.
What podcast listening app do you use?
Google Podcasts. They're merging it into,
that's your problem.
They're merging it into YouTube music. I don't, this will be a little bit of a rant that no one cares about, but I don't like Spotify because you can't have a separate queue for music and podcasts. And I like to queue up podcasts. So that I can order
and then
them.
You're
and
clearly not getting Apple Podcasts. Yeah.
I will not be getting Apple Podcasts. So I'll figure it out. I mean, I'll probably just end up using Spotify and dealing with it, but you know.
You're just an old man who's set in his ways. I don't blame you either.
Yeah. Or maybe I'll try YouTube Music Podcasts, but I didn't like YouTube Music, so we'll see. Otherwise, that is it for this week. We are back again. I'm really excited to read the next chapter, I will say. I want to see how we get all this sorted out. I'm really excited for this Dumbledore scene.
It'll be good. First time that we've actually seen him since the hearing.
Since the hearing.
Yeah.
It's one of the first times we deal with him in the middle of a book and not at the end or beginning. So
yeah,
it'll be fun.
It'll be chapter 22, St. Mungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries. That's the sign that it's 10 p.m.
And you're going to have to recap that chapter, so you might want to practice that word.
Maladies. Well, I wanted to throw an extra L in there.
Maladies. That's
like a melody. Like a melody.
I was thinking more about Malala, but you know, we're way off track. This podcast is over. I hope you didn't listen to the last 2 minutes. I'm David. That was Kyle. Bye.